He's Blank, I'm Branham, it's Brian behind the glass, and it's a Friday edition of the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Friday, getaway show for the Bees. We'll have some fun. 713-780-ESPN. Todd Callis, the voice of the Houston Astros, who's gearing up to call a big league debut. He'll join us a little bit later on in the program. It also is a Friday, so mean text. Todd at 4:45, by the way. A mean text, all the mean things you say to us, we'll be doing that later in the program. So still plenty of time for you to get in for some of those mean things, those nasty things you want to say to us. Who said it? Coming up at 4:30 as well. All right, we mentioned the big league debut of one Jake Bloss. Jake Bloss is starting a Major League Baseball game less than 365 days after he was drafted. Drafted in the third round out of Georgetown, went to the second most popular Lafayette prior to transferring to Georgetown for his final year of college baseball. He's been very good in the minors. 1.74 ERA this year in 12 starts, 2.01 career ERA in 18 starts, 19 appearances since being drafted by the Astros last year. And he goes up against the best offense in baseball, a team that has not lost a series in the month of June. Are the Astros putting too much on Jake Bloss?
Yeah, I don't think they have a choice. But, yeah, it's a bit much to ask of anybody. And we know that a lot of these experimental starting pitchers for the Astros this year haven't gone well. But this one is a very tall task when you think about, on top of everything you said, this team just put a 17 spot on the Yankees yesterday. I mean, this offense is legit. They are really, really good. And this is one of the teams that is going to be, you know, in the playoffs at the end of the year, that's going to contend for the American League. That's how good they are. It used to be that they didn't have the starting pitching. They took care of a little of that in the offseason as well. They are loaded, and this is a whole lot. You hope he comes out like a Bloss, but at the same time, I mean, that's a tall order for sure.
Grade the joke. 713-780-3776. Comes out like a Bloss. You meant, was that a play on Boss?
Like a Bloss, yeah.
Okay. 713-780-3776. Let's grade the joke on that. I was trying to think of a nickname, too, which we might have to come up with a song for Jake Bloss.
Yeah.
Something along the line of, like, flossing, but I couldn't come up with, like, a good one. I don't know if there's, like, a great quote that involves floss, other than, like, floss your teeth every night. But your teeth every night doesn't really, you know, doesn't really register, I don't think.
I'm trying to go more off the play on like a boss or like boss, something with boss in it. But yeah. There's Boss Baby.
The final Bloss. The final Bloss for Jake Bloss. 713-780-ESPN, HRP listener line. I don't mind throwing him to the wolves. Like, I understand that it's daunting, and that's going to temper my expectation. If he goes two times through the lineup today and pitches four innings and gives up three runs, I'm not going to determine that Jake Bloss is like this bust or that he shouldn't have been called up. Like you said, they really don't have any choices. They have tons of pitchers on the injured list, whether it's Justin Verlander, Christian Javier, Jose Urquidy, Luis Garcia, Lance McCullers. What do you expect them to do? Like, what other options are there other than a bullpen day? And a bullpen day really isn't a great recipe either. Now you're taxing your pen. It sets back the bullpen the rest of the series, maybe for like a week. Who knows? So I'm okay throwing Jake Bloss to the Wolves. I don't really mind a whole lot. And yes, it's daunting. I'm not expecting Jake Bloss to like light the world on fire. I mean, most optimistic, I hope he's like Roy Oswalt, where he just comes in as a rookie and all of a sudden he's really good and then he's here to stay for the next, you know, 7 to 10 years. And he's 22 years old. Like, this isn't a 19-year-old kid. He spent a lot of time in college, 1 year at Georgetown. So I'm okay throwing him to the Wolves. Now, I am going to temper my expectation. In no way do I expect Jake Bloss to be, quite frankly, good tonight. Like, it's one thing to make a big league debut and pitch well. It's another thing to make the big league debut against one of the better teams in baseball that come in hot, that lead baseball, actually, in scoring by a pretty substantial margin, and they haven't lost a series in the entire month of June. So I'm tempering my expectations for Jake Bloss, but I am not going to criticize the Astros for throwing him out there against the Baltimore Orioles tonight.
No, you have no choice. You have to live through it. You hope we were kicking it around yesterday just a little bit casually, but you hope that he can get through the lineup once plus, maybe, you know, flirt with twice, try and keep it under three or four runs, and you hope your offense shows up to give yourself a fighting chance. Because it's one thing if you brought him up and he was playing, you know, he's pitching against the White Sox, he's pitching against the Angels, he's pitching against the A's. When you're pitching against a lineup that's been as hot as they are, as good as they are, loaded with talent, That's a challenge for any pitcher, let alone a kid coming out of Double A that's never even sniffed Triple A or the bigs, and saying, here, kid, go out and give us, you know, two times through the lineup.
That's what I want, though. Like, I want him to pitch two times through the lineup. Like, that's my expectation. Now, the amount of runs he gives up two times through the lineup is something where I'm being pretty realistic. But he needs to give you length. Like, if you're not going with a bullpen day and you're calling up a 22-year-old who you think highly of, he does need to provide you some innings. Like, he needs to get you at least three, hopefully four. Now, if he goes six innings and gives up two runs, we're going to be talking about Jake Bless like he's the, you know, the next coming. Now, this is also, like, if you want to look at it from a Dana Brown point of view, this is a testament to Dana Brown. You draft a guy in the third round who didn't go to this power baseball program. He didn't go to a factory. He went to Georgetown after transferring from Lafayette, not even the one in Louisiana, the one in the Patriot League in Pennsylvania. They worked with him. Like, he's got a good frame, 6'3", 223. They added a pitch to Jake Blas. He's throwing, I think they said he's throwing his slider is more of a sweeper now. Instead of a hard slider, it's more of a slow slider, even a sweeper. So they've developed this kid in a quick amount of time to where he's worthy of a big league start. Like, how many starts does he get? You know, maybe twice. If he doesn't pitch well, they'll send him back down to the minors, and we might not see him again this year. It might be going forward. But the fact that he deserves a big league start, or he's pitched well enough to have a big league start, shows that Dana Brown kind of nailed this draft pick. Mm-hmm. And then secondly, minor league development still there for the Houston Astros.
No, I think that's the biggest feather in Dana Brown's cap, whether you believe or don't want to believe that he has had his wings trimmed in so many ways by management. The one thing that at least they've stayed out of the way, because I don't think it's big enough for them to care enough about, but they've stayed out of the way of Dana Brown and his ability to handle the drafts, to evaluate talent. You look at the picks that he had from just a year ago and how quickly they've advanced, and you have to tip your cap and say, this guy knows what he's doing in talent evaluation. And he might know more if he was allowed to do more with the rest of the franchise as well. But for what they've allowed him to do, he seems like, and this is a specialty coming in, one of the reasons why they brought him in, was the way he was able to evaluate talent and get the guys he got in Atlanta. In quick work, he has done some things to make this organization better. And this is one of those guys, to your point, where it's not like other guys where you might never sniff the big leagues again. They're just so desperate for a pitcher, they're calling a guy up and throwing him to the Wolves. This is a kid that's going to be in the discussion for the next several years to be a starting pitcher for the Astros and be one of their future arms, regardless of how that he ends up being used and what he turns out to be. Because of the fact that where they drafted him, what he's done, he's got five pitches in his repertoire, as you mentioned. His change does some really good things, too. He throws about a 94-mile-an-hour fastball, and they like what he's got.
Yeah. What is your it's probably too early to say this because he's been drafted, like, last year. It's been less than a year since he's been drafted. What are your expectations for his career? Like, what do you think he projects as?
I think that best-case scenario, he's probably like a 3, like okay. A 3-4. You know, like a 3-4 starter in the rotation. And, you know, worst best case scenario is he ends up being a solid bullpen arm in your bullpen that, you know, can give you an inning or two and you know, has the ability to get some strikeouts and do some things to be effective. But I would say that right now, it's almost unfair to judge a ceiling for him. But I would say if I look at him, I don't think he has dominating fastball type stuff, but I would say he could be a middle of the rotation guy.
No, this is the Astros version of Spencer Strider. I think this is the future Cy Young. I think he might win 3 or 4 Cy Youngs for Jake Blas. 713-780-ESPN 881. Why did the Astros leave Chicago with Singleton instead of with Andrew Vaughn? Okay. Andrew Vaughn, by the way, is a stiff at first base. I went back and watched the big inning yesterday for the Astros. That guy is a stiff. He is a stiff. The double play ball, like, Yiner would have beaten it anyway, so it didn't matter that he didn't pick that, but, like, hey, pick the baseball. And then the Cooper Hummel one, the dude barely stretched. Yeah. Like, if you stretch, it might not even hit the dirt. Andrew Vaughn is a defensive liability. Now, it's first base. You can hide him there a little bit, et cetera, et cetera. 4478, is Whitley still hurt? He's starting I don't know if you would call it a rehab assignment because he's in minor league baseball, but he went down to the FCL. He went down to West Palm Beach. He's going to be working with them. You know, that place where Jose Abreu was at once upon a time, that place where Luis Garcia is currently at. So Forrest Whitley's going to start throwing baseballs again, but if he's ever on the big league team again, we'll wait and see.
If you're waiting for him to be a part of this team this year, you're going to wait a whole long time.
You're right. I don't know if the texture was asking that, though.
Sure.
He's just saying, you know, update on Whitley. Gallant and George, the Killer G's or the Gag Show, whatever you want to call them, they said they already coined Jake Boss Bloss. So they beat you to it, Blinkers. They beat you. They were first to market on the nickname.
Only because their show's on before ours, but whatever.
That matters, though. Okay. they were first to market. 2568, play the song Like a Boss by Slim Thug. Could that be the early leader in the clubhouse for Jake Bloss's music?
I don't mind it. I like it.
We might as well just go with it since you like nailed it right out of the gate, and it's going to save us time to think about it, and I really don't want to think about it.
Good with it.
All right, cool. So remember that for later, Brian. That's homework assignment. I guess it's not a homework assignment. You're doing it later. 6941, uniqueness is wasted on youth like fine wine or a solid flossing habit. You'll be grateful for it when you're older. Thank you for the wisdom there. 6941. 4488, a rookie manhandled the Astros this week, so it can happen tonight. Dana Brown was falsely given credit for the Atlanta success. Hardly any of their big names are from the Brown era. Spencer Strider is Michael Harris is.
Yep.
Following the Braves on a day by day basis.
The other pitcher, the Fryer.
Well, he would have been there first, I think.
Was he?
Because I mean, he pitched in the World Series.
Okay.
When he shut down the Astros in Game 6.
He did.
Six.
He pitched well, yeah.
So that probably was before Brown, but I don't know the timeline of Atlanta Braves. I don't know that much. Now, I will say that maybe we give too much praise for Dana Brown when maybe the brilliant mind there was Alex Anthopoulos. I'm with you on that, 4478. But they've had some big names in the Brown era. The biggest one, Strider. A lot of people give Dana Brown for finding Spencer Strider.
But Michael Harris won Rookie of the Year, right?
I believe so.
Yeah.
I've never
a good outfielder.
Sure, but did he draft him as the head scout, assistant general manager, or was it Anthopoulos? Like, I haven't seen the Dana Brown connection with Michael Harris as much as I've seen it with Spencer Strider. Like, Strider, when people give credit for who found Spencer Strider and who saw, like, the potential there, they say Dana Brown. I haven't seen that with Harris, but maybe you can. Maybe you can count it. I just haven't seen it. 713-780-ESPN.
You think it's accurate that more so than in basketball, when you have a disciple of, like, a big name, like Theo Epstein.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the disciples of Epstein have all turned out to be pretty legit. In basketball, I mean, I've seen the disciples of Daryl Morey be kind of hit or miss. It seems like in baseball, if you get the right guy to learn under, that they normally turn out to be pretty successful. Is that fair?
I think it's case by case. Like, the Rays have not had a good history of guys that leave and go somewhere else. Was it the Bloom guy that was in Boston? They hated him there. They fired him. Chain Bloom, I think.
Chain Bloom is right. That's right.
And then, I mean, I liked Click.
I think Click.
But he got fired.
But he won a World Series.
He did. Now, was he the architect or was he the guy kind of guiding? I would say he was more of a guider than the architect. Case by case.
Because Theo's tree was...
I mean, Hunsicker's tree was pretty poor. Tim Papura.
Yeah. Theo's had Friedman in with the Dodgers now, and he had a couple.
And Friedman was originally at... Was Friedman under Theo?
I think so.
I don't think so. I think Friedman got his start in Tampa.
I thought he had worked with Theo first, but I know that Theo's had a couple.
Maybe he was an assistant under Theo and then got the GM job, but he made his hay in Tampa. He was like the first general manager at Tampa when they got sold and they went like full 2% better Wall Street stuff. 713-780-ESPN. Astros lineup is out today. Joey Loperfido is in it. That's good. The good news. So behind Jake Bloss, the Astros go Altuve, Bregman, Yordan DHing, Yiner catching, Myers and center, Singleton at first, Dubon plays short today. Payne gets a day off. Loperfido in left, Cabbage in right. So the Astros stacking lefties against the righty Grayson Rodriguez, even though he has reverse splits. But that's the Astros 9. So we know that Loperfido is in it. Loperfido's batting 8th. He's playing left field. Now that Loperfido is back, what is your plan to use him? How do you deploy one Joey Loperfido? 713-780-3776, the HRMP listener line. We're also on Twitch, twitch.tv/ESPN97.5, on YouTube at ESPN Houston. Blankers is at Pac-Man Joel on Twitter. Brian's at Sacked by BMAC, and I'm at Jeremy Branham. It's the Bees on ESPN97.5, ESPN92.5.
Guys, right now I'm here to tell you about Vanderford Air, because Vanderford Air, they're here for you, and they do so many things. They do plumbing. If you got anything, you want to do a repipe, you got some plumbing issues, they handle you, they get you done, taken care of, and they'll make sure everything is guaranteed. And remember that I said that, because I'm going to tell you that with everything that I'm about to get into, which is if you have something with your air conditioning unit, you want to get your AC checked out, your HVAC is going on the fritz, or your hot water heaters. They take care of all of it. But what I really love about these guys is they guarantee everything, including every bit of your satisfaction. And that's why I always recommend that you go to Vanderford Air. There's plenty of companies out there that would love to get your business, but how about the one that even has a guarantee for when they're going to come and see you when you call them? What's fantastic is with the heat getting hotter by the day and getting in heading towards triple digits, you want a company that when you call them, especially if you have an emergency or your AC goes out, that's going to be there as soon as they possibly can. And a lot of times you get these companies to say, hey, we got a lot of people on our call sheet right now. We might be able to get you in a couple days or maybe next week. That's not acceptable. And they make sure that it's not, because within 24 hours of you calling them, they're going to be there to see you, because that's the way they do business. And like I said, everything that you have done with them is going to be guaranteed, from the parts that they use to the new units that they put in to the workmanship that their employees give you. Everything is guaranteed. It's the best value. It's the lowest cost to you. And you have all the assurances it's going to be done right, and done right the first time to your satisfaction. And oh, by the way, it's 100% satisfaction guaranteed or your money back. That's why I tell you to put the number in your phone. 281-557-COOL. Save it and use it later, or use it now and have them do a full complete checkup before it gets too late. VanderfordAir.com will also get you all their services and a complete overview of the company. But if you want to get to them and get to them fast, 281-557-COOL gets the job done. Then they'll get the job done right for you. Check them out today. Tell them I sent you by. Check out VanderfordAir.com.
6941, Bloss is what you do right before you blossom as an amazing pitcher. 6941 6, grade the joke. 713-780-3776.
Four.
I'm going to give it a 5-2. 5-2. It's not bad. It's not bad. Yeah, it's not bad. Mm. I mean, it's like you deliver it with, like, I'm going to be really stupid right now. I think you can get up to a 5-2. Up to a 5-2. What are you giving it?
I like a 2-5.
Yeah, you are stiff. Stiff graders, tough. 1029, do you think it's better for a pitcher to come up and taste the majors quickly, seeing big league hitters, etc., as opposed to a hitter who may not get as many at-bats in the majors?
I think it's always good to get major league experience. I think especially if you have high hopes for them being a part of your future, the more of a taste, even from a hitting perspective, you want to see what major, there's a difference. There's a true difference, as we all know, between AAA and the bigs. When you start seeing what it takes to be a hitter in Major League Baseball with the kind of pitching you're going to face, it can only help you. And I think the same thing with a pitcher. When you start facing a full lineup of major league hitters, it's a different ballgame. And it kind of teaches you where you have to be and what kind of work you still have to put in to not just make it, but to be able to stay there.
Yeah, I think it's better for a pitcher because if let's say that you get called up, say he makes two starts, Verlander's back, he gets sent back down, not because that he's like awful or anything, just because it's the numbers game. Whereas like Loperfido has been up a couple of times and then has been sent back down. I think it's better for a pitcher because you get a taste of the difference. It's like, oh, okay, here's the difference, and then you can go back and work on, okay, I can't leave my fastball in the middle of the outer third. I have to dot it on the outside part of the plate. And then you can go back into the minors and work on that. Whereas a hitter, you can go see big league pitching and you're like, dang, okay, these are the areas where they're going to be able to get me out. And then you go back to AAA and you're not seeing those type of pitches. You're not right. Seeing that type of, you know, pitcher that you see at the big league level. So I think it's better for a pitcher than it is a hitter.
I think from a hitting perspective, though, it's the fact that if you go up there and take the guys that, you know, the 4A type players or the guys that think have great numbers in AAA, and then they come up and realize how different it is and they can't adjust. But if you're Joey Loperfido and you get called up and you get a taste of major league pitching and you're successful, now you've got that confidence to go, yeah, I can go back and hit AAA, but I know when I get there, it's not going to be too big for me, that I know I'm capable of being a major league player hitting major league pitching.
Yeah. I really don't want to say what I'm about to say, but I think Loperfido's numbers are not as good as they look. And I know that the numbers are the numbers. Hey, he's 13 for 39, Branham. He also has 17 strikeouts and 39 at-bats. His strikeout percentage is nearly 40%. Like, that does not play. Like, that's something that he's going to have to get better at to sustain that level of batting average. Like, if we're going to talk about, well, Ryan Pressly was super unlucky, then you need to say that Joey Loperfido was pretty dang lucky as well. Major League Baseball average for batting average for ball in play, BABIP, is .288. .288, okay. A guy touches a baseball. On average, it's going to be a .288 batting average. You know what Loperfido's is at?
.215.
Nope. That would suggest bad luck.
What is it?
.571.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Ooh.
Yeah, so like it's suggesting that he's been super lucky and that you could cut his hits in half. If you cut his hits in half, let's even round up, now you're looking at a 7-for-39 hitter. That's the reason the Astros sent him back down. They saw the swing and miss. They didn't see a bunch of hard contact. Look, hopefully he's, like, worked on that a bit. Hopefully he can gut the strikeout rate down. Hopefully he stays super lucky and has a 571 BABIP. But a 571 BABIP, if he had enough at bats to qualify, would be the league leader by far.
But you think that's why they sent him down? Instead of yes. just the fact that he has to keep getting reps and the fact that they wanted him to get reps at first and they
the
wanted...
first time, yeah. First time I do. I think the reason they sent him down was for two reasons. One, they didn't trust him at first base. And then secondly, he's striking out a ton. Like, they told you they'd rather have John Singleton on the roster. They told you they'd rather have Trey Cabbage on the roster.
I felt that was more for defensive purposes than offensive, but you might be
Which
right.
Which one, Singleton or Cabbage?
For the fact that Joey Loperfido, they wanted him to get more reps at first base. That's why he didn't get any reps at first base.
He wasn't getting many reps in Sugarland at first base. He was starting maybe 35% of his games at first once he went back.
But I felt like they liked what they had seen from him offensively. Yes, the strikeouts were problematic, but the fact that he was getting hits, he was at least getting hits and was somewhat more, he was more productive than Chaz. He was doing some things where they were trying to find a way, and they felt like, hey, if we can't play him every day, we're going to get him, you know, frequent everyday reps down in Sugarland so he stays fresh.
He didn't play for an entire week before they sent him down. He was on the roster for 7 days and did not play and then sent him down. They had every opportunity to play him then. And it was before Chaz was – it was right around the time that Chaz was coming off the IL, and it was before Jose Abreu was on the team.
The last time it when Espada said that we're going to – he's here because he's going to play.
That was the first time.
Play. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, to me, I just think that they believe in him still, and they believe offensively that he's shown he can do it. They just needed him to stay fresh. We'll see what he's got now, because now he's also coming off that injury. But I hope he shows he can hit the ball, because the one thing that you do say about the difference between AAA and the bigs is he was a power hitter in AAA. I mean, at one point he was leading all of minor league baseball in home runs, and his one home run in the major leagues. It's different.
Yeah. It's just something I'm like, hey, I hope that I'm wrong and Loperfido is a 333 hitter with a 580 BABIP. Just some things I noticed that if he struggles, these are going to be the reasons as to why. 713-780-ESPN. Dubon at shortstop and a rookie pitcher. Oh, no. I don't think you're losing a lot defensively when Dubon's at short, though. I'm fine with Dubon playing shortstop.
I think it's fair to say Pena probably has a little more range and a stronger arm. But at the same time,
I don't think he has a stronger arm.
I think he does.
I think Dubon's got a cannon.
Okay. Regardless, I don't think you're losing all that much with Dubon at shortstop. I think that's fine. I mean, I just think a rookie pitcher is going to have some tough luck against a team as good as the Orioles.
I'm also curious to see, like, I know nothing about Blas, really. I know he's got a fastball that sits in the mid-90s, touches upper 90s. He throws a curve. He throws a sweeper. I think he's got a changeup. Like, is he a ground ball pitcher? Is he a fly ball pitcher? Like, I'm excited to watch him and just learn a little bit about Jake Blas. I statistic watch minor leaguers. I don't watch minor league baseball. I listen to it, though, on ESPN 92.5. 2.568, I want to see Loperfido have starts over Cabbage. I'm with you on that. Is J-Bone calling Lopey the next Chris Carter? If Loperfido had a Chris Carter career but played at average defense in the corner outfield, I would take that right now.
Yeah, he was a very much a high strikeout guy, but he also had a lot of pop. I would love to see that Loperfido would have more pop on the big league level. That'd be great. You don't think he's going to be in the plans for the first base long term?
I don't know. I don't get a good feel for it now. Now, there's not a great option at first base unless you move Yiner Diaz from behind the dish, which I would do because I don't like Yiner Diaz as a receiver. I think he's poor at it. I think Loperfido's natural position is more corner, especially left field. He doesn't have a very good arm. He's got a weak arm, actually. He throws it from way down here. He, like, shot puts it. I like him in left. Very small sample size of him in center. Like, he has the athletic traits to play center field. Mm-hmm. He's speedy. He's long. Now, the few opportunities I've seen to him react to baseballs have not been good. No. Maybe that's an anomaly. Let me see more. As of right now, I'd say he's a left fielder. I would move Yiner Diaz to first. Willie Wagner, Billy Wagner's son, like, he's kind of a tweener. Like, he's probably not good enough to play defense anywhere other than first base. He's a good enough contact hitter, but he doesn't have any sort of slug or any sort of power, so he's kind of like this tweener-like player. I don't know if they view him as the first baseman of the future. I tend to doubt it. They probably view him more as like a backup, maybe a pinch hit bat, something like that.
He started the year, and they thought he was going to be the heir apparent possibly to Bregman, and then they moved him around the infield to now where he's at first base.
He's only played 8 games at third this year, so I'm not sure they thought he was the heir apparent to Bregman. Like, it seems like they've given up on the idea of him playing third base.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, it's interesting to me because I'm with you on Loper. I think the other thing with Loper Fido that I've seen is I just think I don't think he takes great angles to the ball from center field when you've got more ground to cover in the alleys. But I think that he could be a serviceable and better left fielder. And you're right about from the speed aspect of it. But I thought he got late jumps and also got really bad angles on trying to get to balls, especially in the gaps.
Yeah, I agree with that. And small sample, maybe that was just like an anomaly and he's good at it. I didn't see it. I'm with you on that. 6206, I agree with Loper Fido and 4A players, but we still have Singleton on the roster for over a year. Good point. I'd rather roster Loper Fido than Singleton. Why didn't Loper Fido bunt with man on second, no outs? Yes, it worked, but there was a 70% chance it might not have. We got lucky, not a smart at bat. I have no idea what he's talking about.
I have no idea what game he's talking about.
I have no idea what that means.
Last time he was a pinch runner, I think.
Yeah, is he talking about the Spacers game, maybe? I have no idea. Corey, I know off topic, but is it me or has Pena regressed with laying off the slider away? I think he got better at it at the start of the year, and then the last month or so, he's regressed.
He's been scuffling a little bit lately. So, yeah, I mean, he's scuffling on a lot of things at the plate because he was at one point over 300, but you know, you relying on him. You hope he can find it. I think he's still far better than he was a year ago at chasing the slider and the off the corner pitches.
Yeah. All right. 713-780 ESPN. Got sidetracked there a little bit, but it's okay. Now that Loper Fido is back, what is your plan on using him? How do you deploy him? 713-780-3776. It's the Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Lawrence and Stafford. Dusty Baker was right about us thanking him. He did reveal that Yiner would be better at first than catcher. Y'all holler. Those are better, 0002. We can work with that. You give me four sentences. We can't work with that. What's that?
Did you cap? Is he going to be better? Is there a cap for how many texts he can send today?
He can send as many texts as he wants. It's got to be one sentence, though. One sentence. I don't read anything past one sentence. TLDR. Key says I would like Yiner to, if he could play third. I don't think so. I don't think Yiner's a third baseman. All right, how do you deploy Joey Loper Fido? Now that he's back, I imagine he's here for good unless he just completely struggles. If he's really, really bad, imagine that he's here for good if he's solid or decent. How do you deploy him now? How do you make sure that you give him the at-bats? How do you make sure you give him the playing time? We'll find out.
I would really like to see him at least get some reps at first base. I think that when we talked about it, if you truly want to keep Dubon as your Swiss Army knife utility guy that can do what he's doing today and play shortstop and moving him around, then I would see him in a platoon role with Singleton and then give him some periodic reps in the outfield depending on when Tucker comes back and or how much you want to play Jordan in left field, that you get him some split reps so that he's pretty consistently in the lineup between those two spots and see where it goes from there based on how he hits the ball.
Yeah, I'd like to see him all over the field too. Like I don't know that he needs a like one starting position. I want to see Chaz McCormick play a little bit more than he's been playing. Like he's had a couple of good games. He's had like a solid week or so. He was 0-2 yesterday, got pinch hit for by Trey Cabbage. So it's like, I don't think Espada likes Chaz McCormick a whole lot. And it might be performance-based. I'm sure that it is. But he's pinch hitting Trey Cabbage for Chaz McCormick in big spots of the game in the seventh inning yesterday, and Cabbage strikes out. He's not playing against most right-handed pitchers. Chaz McCormick's rarely in the lineup against righties. You have a Grayson Rodriguez, a righty on the mound today. No Chaz McCormick. So it seems like they're going to platoon in left field. At least that's my opinion. I think they're going to platoon in left field where Loper Fido is going to play against righties. Chaz McCormick's going to play against lefties. I'd like to see Loper Fido in the mix a little bit more at first base, which would allow Chaz McCormick to play against righties a little bit more often. Because I'd rather see Chaz in the lineup than John Singleton, right?
Right.
So if Chaz is in the lineup, that means, and you need to have Loper Fido in there, that where's the position? Probably first base. Mm-hmm. So I'd like to see Loper Fido get the first base reps as well. I've had this feeling that they're not going to play him there, which I don't like. I'm with you. I'd play him at first base. I would give him some at-bats in left field. If Jordan is just, you know, hell-bent and playing left field when Fromber's pitching, okay, you can have that one day. You know, maybe he can DH every now and then. If you have a tough righty and Jake Myers like struggles against some tough righties, especially that aren't fastball-exclusive pitchers, maybe Loper Fido gets a start a week in center field just to give Myers a day off here or there. Kyle Tucker's currently not on this team. Now, I don't love Loper Fido in right because of his arm, but maybe a start there a week, maybe a start in center a week, maybe three starts in left field a week, maybe one start at first base a week, and add that all together, that's six. So I don't think he needs one set position. I think you can move him around the field, be like a, you know, super utility without playing in the infield.
Yeah, and I'm fine with that as long as he's getting those you know, frequent reps so that we can make sure we see what he can be and that we can see how, you know, what he can do at the plate. And if he has the versatility to play those positions and doesn't embarrass himself, then you've got options going forward for the big picture. But for this year, I think he just has to be in there. I think the question really becomes, too, like, what are they doing with Chaz? Simply because it was before that they took him off the – when he came back from San Antonio, when he came back from the rehab stint, they were force-feeding him into the lineup, and he wasn't very good. But at least now – and maybe the home run got him started in the blowout game against the Tigers, but he started to hit the baseball a little bit more, to where you would think that that's maybe, if there's any signs of Chaz being close to the Chaz of last year, he's got to play.
The reason that I'm with you, and the reason that I would play Chaz more than Singleton is I think Chaz has a higher upside.
Uh-huh.
Like, Singleton is this fringy 4A, maybe pinch hit bat off the bench that can only play one position. I don't think he has the upside of what Chaz potentially could be. Like, you look at Chaz's numbers last year and compare it to any season that John Singleton has had, and that Chaz McCormick blows him out of the water. And then Chaz gives you options. Like, Chaz can play, I don't love him in right because he also has a noodle for an arm, but Chaz can play any of the three outfield positions. He plays a good left field, a really good left field. He plays a solid to good center field. So I would roll out Chaz McCormick more often than Espada is, and I would roll him out more often than he's using Singleton.
If you want to go to their whole philosophy of back of the baseball card, I'll take Chaz's back of his baseball card than I will over John Singleton. And I believe that we've seen enough of John Singleton over the years and from the early John Singleton to now to know he is exactly who he is, and nothing's going to change. Whereas you just want Chaz to be what he was a year ago, and you'd be absolutely ecstatic with a guy that can play, like you said, all three outfield positions. He gives you versatility there. But the fact is that, you know, he comes up big at big times, even defensively. He can hit the long ball, and yet he was a very good key part of this team a year ago, to where he has the potential to be here for several years. He just needs to kind of get back to where he was a year ago. So of the two guys, the positional versatility is one thing, the ceiling is another thing, and the fact that he's done it and had better one single year, but he's had better statistics over his career than John Singleton, yeah. That's why I would take him too.
713-780-ESPN, HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. So that podcast, that baseball podcast with Przinski, I never know the name of it. Intentional Talk? No, I think that was the MLB Network.
That's the
thing.
MLB Network.
Whatever. Przinski's podcast that he has with that dweeb and that other guy. I think Kratz actually.
Is one of them.
Yep. They had, they were interviewing Lance Lynn on a golf course yesterday. And he was playing golf with current Astro. You might not know that because we haven't seen him this year. Current Astro, Kendall Graveman. And I think it was Przinski that asked him, oh, well, how's Graveman's arm doing? So here is the segment of this podcast where they're talking to Lance Lynn and Kendall Graveman playing golf.
Where's Graveman? Ask him how his arm's doing. When's he coming back?
He's doing well. He's doing well. He's got a throwing program and all that. So he's moving along.
This year?
Or is it no, not? He's not going to pitch this year.
Okay, they want to know if you're coming back.
Graveman here.
I'm in the middle of a throwing program that ends in July. So,
ooh.
We'll see.
Ooh. Hey, did you see all those SEC teams in the World
breaking,
Series not named Mississippi State?
Wait, ends in July? So, Kendall, yeah. You're coming back in July or August?
Well, I'm a throwing program, then I got to do a mound progression, so... I'm just taking a day at a time. You know the answer.
Playoff stretch. Playoff stretch.
So a throwing program that ends in July. That's what he said. Throwing program that ends in July. And he said in this throwing program, he's doing mound progressions. Now, we wouldn't know this because he's not posting it on Instagram wearing, if the Astros are at home, the home jerseys. And if they're on the road, wearing the road grays like one Lance McCullers does. But how much does this catch your attention? What do you think is the possibility that Kendall Graveman, who's in the final year of his deal, could pitch for the Astros this year?
Well, it's extremely intriguing. And if there's any chance that he can help you, and we know that how taxed the bullpen gets and how, you know, we've been wondering in all the musical chairs of the bullpen out there and the shortcomings of guys, some of the guys they've used, it'd be great to know that a guy, you know, if you can stay in this thing, that there's a guy that is out there that might be able to show you not only what he can do, but then you might have to you might have a decision to make on whether you want to bring him back and if you want to sign him. But it'd be great to know that he's one of the guys that you could possibly add in and around the trade deadline instead of having to make a move when I've said, you know, one of the things they should look at is adding an extra arm or two for the bullpen. If you could get a guy like that back, and we know he's had success and he's been a closer too, that'd be a huge shot in the arm in a positive way for this team.
Yeah. Sometimes I'm a wet blanket because I speak the truth. I don't see the timeline here. Like, I really don't see how this happens. The reports were that Graveman underwent labrum surgery in early January. It's a 9 to 12 month recovery to come back. Like, the most aggressive of timelines has him back September 1st. So, and it, and even if he's back by September 1st, like, there's time there. There's now you got a month and you rosters expand. So, like, it doesn't kill you to carry Graveman, who might not be as good. But that's the most aggressive timeline. And how is he going to be good that quick? There's a lot of times when pitchers have labrum surgery, especially in their 30s, like Kendall Graveman, and they are never the same. They're not big league pitchers at all. So, like, it's cool that Graveman's working hard. I admire that Graveman's working hard. I admire that he's on this throwing program, and I admire that while he's out for the year, in the final year of his deal after the Astros traded Corey Lee for him last season, I respect the heck out of him busting his tail trying to get back to give Dana Brown and to give the Houston Astros options. But a 9 to 12 month recovery, labrum surgery for a pitcher in his 30s, I'm not expecting Kendall Graveman to be back. And if he is back, I don't think he's going to be good enough to be a factor on the Houston Astros.
Here's how I'll devil's advocate that, just by saying, because of the fact that we don't know what we don't know. So, yes, he could have had labrum surgery, but we don't know if it was a small tear or a small repair, or it was significant. So a lot of every individual case could be different, to where maybe he required surgery, but maybe it wasn't the kind of extensive surgery that a lot of these other tears are, and maybe that's why he's on a shorter timeline. I'm just trying to be hopeful in the fact that because you have a guy that you wouldn't have to go make a move for, that has major league experience, that's been a closer, that could actually has done some things even here, to where that would be a nice addition to the team. That, yeah, I believe it when I see it, but it is possible, in the realm of a possibility, that maybe it was just a small tear repair as opposed to a major deal with the surgery.
Yeah, I'm not sure how that works. Like, a small labral tear versus a big labrum tear? Like, I have no idea. But I'm like you. I'm going to believe this when I see it. I'm not counting on Kendall Graveman to give me anything. I'm not counting on one decent inning for Kendall Graveman. If he proves me wrong, he proves me wrong. And you know, this probably isn't fair to Kendall Graveman. Also, from the Houston Astro point of view, I'm over being optimistic about guys coming back. And I know that this had nothing to do with the Astros. It was Kendall Graveman saying it from a golf cart, which, why are you playing golf whenever you're 6 months removed from a shoulder
and
surgery?
Where are they playing golf? Because Lance Lynn's with the Cardinals, right?
I don't know where they're playing golf.
That was no clue. That's kind of weird, too. You'd think if he's on a program, he's probably close to the team, the doctors, the training staff, and everything.
Yeah, I mean, some guys do it independently.
Yeah,
some guys,
JV does.
Yeah, some guys are independent about it. Yeah, I have no idea where the Cardinals were. That is kind of weird that I didn't put that together. But, yeah, I'm not going to count on Kendall Graveman throwing one significant pitch for the Astros until it actually happens. And it's not fair to Graveman, but the Astros have positioned me and conditioned me to think this way.
I would say you're right, though. The positive is it didn't come from the Astros, because then you wouldn't believe it at all.
True.
At least, and there would have been discomfort in it. But at least from this perspective, you're hearing it straight from the horse's mouth that he's on a throwing program where he's not ruling it out for this year. So at least from that perspective, I have more hope than I would have if the Astros put something out.
I agree with that. I also don't want anybody to talk about their return until they've returned. Because, again, the Astros have earned this reputation. All right, 713-780-ESPN. Do you believe that Graveman can pitch this season? Does it move your needle? 713-780-3776. Also, it looks very much like Yordan Alvarez gets the Roger Clemens treatment, and that is okay. 713-780-3776. It's the Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. There's a team in this city that deserves all of your attention. The Houston SaberCats, the best team in Major League Rugby. Won last week against Seattle, 13-1. Winners of 8 in a row. They've already clinched home field advantage in the playoffs. They'll host that playoff game after the international break in July. Looking for 9 in a row with a road match this weekend. And then 2 weeks, they will be home for the regular season finale, June 29th, the Texas rival matchup. It's Houston versus Dallas for Fan Appreciation Night, June 29th at SaberCats Stadium. Fan Appreciation Night, so they're throwing deals at you. You got your choice of 3 different deals, and then you can get 20% off, too, if you mention ESPN 20. First deal, $20 tickets, so you got that. You have the Texas two-step, which is $40 for 2 tickets. You can do the math, 20 times 2, 40. And then Beat the Heat, Beat the Heat package. You get four tickets, four waters, four hot dogs, all for $95. All of that for less than $100. Where else can you take the family for entertainment, food, and drink for less than $100? Nowhere else. That's the best value in town, and the Sabercats are rolling. Secure your tickets right now. HoustonSabercats.com/tickets. HoustonSabercats.com/tickets. And when you check out, use promo code ESPN20. And when you use that promo code ESPN20, you're going to receive 20% off your purchase. Regular season finale, June 29th, Houston, Dallas, and then the playoffs to come to Houston coming up in July as well. Head to HoustonSabercats.com right now to secure your tickets immediately. Read up to our Astro fans mad at Lance McCullers and not Graveman simply because of the HEB commercials.
I don't think it has anything to do with that.
Yeah, I think it's more just the fact that Lance McCullers has been MIA.
Just can't stay healthy, and that there was that whole guessing game and, you know, and denial to some degree and all the stories that behind it with the injuries he's had that frustrate people.
Now, Graveman's also had injuries.
But not for the length of it, because Graveman hasn't been here as long either, to where these are multiple injuries with this franchise and all the mm-hmm. kind of stuff that went with it, whereas Graveman was kind of a short-term guy that they went out and got that doesn't have the kind of the standing in the city as well.
But shouldn't that earn more respect for McCullers, that he's been like a postseason hero and was a postseason hero that brought the first World Series to Houston?
I think, look, you can make the case that it's unfair, the amount of criticism that he gets from the city, but you could also make a case on the flip side that whether it was the Astros, the doctors, a combination with him or just him, that it was handled so poorly and everybody was led to believe one thing when it was actually another, and it took such a body of time before they actually finally diagnosed surgery, and that was after the last injury he had, that's what, you know, and people hate the money factor. The fact that Lance is making what he's making and he's not on the field just drives people to be more negative.
Yeah. 713-780-ESPN, another text. I have about as much faith that Graveman will throw a complete inning this year as I do McCullers. Which of the two would you have more faith in to give you a valuable inning this year? Kendall Graveman or Lance McCullers?
Lance McCullers.
I do too. For me, it's the timeline. Like,
for me, it's the uniform.
Really?
No.
Okay. I was about to be triggered.
If he's wearing the game uniform in videos, it's got to be the difference maker.
Okay. For me, it's the timeline, because we were told like 12, 13, 14 months for the forearm tendon surgery, which puts Lance McCullers in line to, even if we give him a wiggle room, where he should be back. Whereas Kendall Graveman, 9 to 12 months, the most aggressive of timelines, he's got a month. He's got a month to try to get some innings in. But it's a fun question there. All right, 713-780-ESPN. Yordan Alvarez flew into Chicago yesterday, hit a home run, and then flew out of Chicago later yesterday. Yordan Alvarez is getting full Roger Clemens treatment. And look, personal issues, we're not going to be insensitive about that. We have no idea what was going on there. Yordan Alvarez has missed some games out of town in the past. He missed a series against Tampa late April 2024, that neck strain. April 2023, he was out two series. It was a two-city road trip, Arizona and Seattle, missed that entire trip. And then he was out at Seattle in mid-April 2022. So is Yordan Alvarez getting some preferential treatment? Probably, and I'm okay with that. Whenever you show up into the city and you hit a home run and then you fly out of the city, you're allowed to get special treatment. When you're as good a player as Yordan Alvarez is, you can show up mostly when you want. If you're Trey Cabbage, you don't have those luxuries. The whole coach adage and saying and mantra that we treat every player the same is baloney. That is false. You're not treating Yordan Alvarez the same way that you're treating Trey Cabbage. Yordan's getting full Roger Clemens treatment, and it is totally acceptable.
No question it is, and you hit on it. The main thing, more so than anything else, is if you are at a certain ability level better than others, you will be treated differently, and that's just the way it is. And Jimmy Johnson used to talk about that in football. I've seen it happen in basketball. The fact of the matter is that not every player is going to be treated the same way. And that Roger Clemens is one thing. I've seen it from Akeem Olajuwon, where, you know, they made special preferential treatment for Dream, whether it be because he needed the prayer room on Fridays and they moved practices to be completely around that time. And then if he was late for a team bus or a team plane or something like that, that's okay because it's Dream. But the younger guys and the lesser than players on the team understood you are never to be late for the planes and the shoot arounds and the things like that. And it goes on and on. with all the different players. If you are at a certain level, membership has its privileges, and they're going to work around you, and they're going to be very forgiving. And if you're not, then they're not.
Yeah. Jordan isn't stealing money. He deserves the star treatment, says 1029. Blaine, I think, giving me a little jab. Think Jordan flew commercial, a Crane's personal jet. Yeah. 713-780-ESPN. A couple of the Twitchers here. Poncho says Jordan is royalty. Let the man be. Dre says Jordan does no wrong. We all agree. We all agree. It is weird how often Jordan has these mysterious roadies where he's not there. Just saying.
Yeah, I don't, you know, I don't think that the team, some of the things you just kind of look, you turn the other cheek and you just kind of say, okay, Jordan's being Jordan, or we're going to deal with that. But until there's a negative or something that leads you to believe that there's a reason to change that, you do. Your star's preferential treatment is there, and you're going to continue to do it, especially when he does what he does when he comes back.
Yep.
Is the only thing that separates us from treating it as no big deal to us freaking out about it is the fact that Jordan's hitting, and up until this year, yes, the Astros are winning? Because, yes, I mean, you could make a similar comparison to Laremy Tunsil getting star treatment, just not deciding not to finish the rest of the season when we maybe could have. And I don't know. And obviously, the Texans are losing, so people don't like that. But Astros, yeah, winning, Jordan hits home runs, so everyone forgives it.
If Jordan was hitting like John Singleton, I think everybody would be more critical of this.
Yeah.
But it is,
yeah,
it is a trend that I've noticed. Mm-hmm. That's all I'm saying. It is a trend that I've – and then they don't ask him about it. They don't – like, he never was – he never answered about his neck.
So how is he going to know anything about
this? He was never asked about his neck last year.
Yeah, that is bizarre.
Yeah, it's really weird.
But the other thing, too, is Brian, to your question, it's also like the acceptance of the organization and or the team. A lot of teams, and also the behavior of said player, not just the performance. Dream is all-world best guy on the planet type human being. So everybody was just like, we totally understand, we get it, and that's Dream. But James Harden at a certain point wore it out, because there were guys that were calling him out, like being out night before games and not performing in big games when they needed him. And then when you got a Russell Westbrook, it was like, wait a minute, time out. The rest of the team has to be here at 10:45 and James can roll in at 11:15 and we're not going to say anything about it. And that's when things started to change too.
You know what was weird about this one too? And again, you know, we don't know what was going on, personal reasons. Hopefully everything's okay. I think it was, if Jordan was playing yesterday. Was Espada, when he was talking to the media ahead of game two in the series, said that they might have Jordan Alvarez flying into town that night. Mm-hmm. So he might be flying into town tonight, all of a sudden turned into he's flying in tomorrow morning in a span of like 6 hours, 12 hours. Like, why was Espada thinking he was flying in on the night of game two, and then all of a sudden it turned into he's flying in game three? And I know there was a little weather in the area, but they could have waited it out.
Depending on what kind of family issue it was too, with kids and things like that, you just never know. And if it's something where, you know, medically, if it was something medically and someone was on the mend or something, and then
say that he's flying in that night, you would err on the side of caution.
You know what, and again, because I don't want to speculate on what it was, but let's just say that something was up with one of the family members from a health perspective, and they were making strides, starting to feel better, but all of a sudden there was a little bit of uncertainty that you would go, you know what, for the sake of me needing to be here, I'm going to stick it out. I don't know. Obviously, it's all hypothetical.
Yeah, I just don't think Espada would say that he's going to be here. He has the chance to be here tonight if he wasn't expecting him to be there that night, or if it was still up in the air or still questionable. Because if you're going to say that, you have to be pretty confident that he's flying in that night. And the Astros have never been the Astros have never been transparent or have good information. But I don't know if that's Espada. Like, I don't know if Espada's been one that's been, like, given us false information. Has he? Like, I don't know if there's many examples to that.
I put it on, like, Dana and Bagwell and guys like that just kind of either have diarrhea of the mouth or just try and give you – they tell you one thing and another thing happens. I don't think it would be as much on Espada, but I do think it could happen because every situation is different. If it's a family thing, I think that's different than saying –
I agree with that. I just feel like you're super conservative if it's a family thing or if you're worried about something. Like, I don't think you would give a timeline.
Okay. My big thing would be, like, just from personal experience with – and again, this is just me speaking of my experience. But if I had a relative that was teetering on whether they need surgery or not and they were making progress – that I would say, hey, look, I'm going to call my employer and say, it looks like I'm going to be back at work, possibly tonight, but definitely tomorrow. And then all of a sudden, if the doctors had apprehension and said, we think we might have to do surgery, well, then I'm not going.
Right. But your boss or us wouldn't be like, we expect him back later in the show.
Fair.
You know, that's because that's the extension of it. That's what Espada did, which is weird. It's weird. Or maybe it was nothing. Maybe it was something. I don't know.
Maybe he misspoke, too. Maybe, you know, they had that conversation and that there was a chance he could come back. And then the way he presented it, like he did, made you believe, hey, there's a legit chance he could be back.
Yeah, if there's a book that comes out about the Astros in 20 years and it was like Yordan would skip his towns, it wouldn't surprise me.
No, me either.
6941, if without you we are nothing, you get preferential treatment. Agree to that. They need him. Make him play, says 5623. Yeah, good luck getting Yordan Alvarez to do something Yordan Alvarez doesn't want to do. Good luck. I'll pay to watch it. 1509, do y'all know the coach who would say he's going to treat all players with respect, but all players are not the same? Yeah, I know several of them.
Yeah. I mean, look, in every situation is different in the locker room and otherwise, but you have to trust and believe that whatever he's dealing with or if he says he can't play until he proves you otherwise. I mean, I think you're right. In 20 years, if there's a book that comes out and says that he didn't want to play in Seattle or he didn't like playing in Seattle or Atlanta or wherever, that you just go, yeah, but guess what? He's Yordan Alvarez. Yeah. He had some of the biggest moments in history, and when he was right, your team was way better.
Yeah, yeah, it's okay. It's okay that this is happening. All right, 713-780-ESPN, HRP listener line. Let's make the Rockets great again. You make the pick. Rockets and the next two. Who do you want the Rockets to pick at number three? Let's put our feet into the shoes. Fancy shoes of Rafael Stone. It's the Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.